to the American Revolution podcast. This is episode 27, Philip Schuyler. So today's date is September 11th, 2017. This date is remembered for two events in American history. The first, and probably more obvious, is of course the September 11th attacks that took place in New York and in Washington. And I would like to, as a native New Yorker, dedicate this episode to those fallen heroes, the cops, the Port Authority, the FDNY, all those men that died trying to save the people in both towers. Let us also not forget those on Flight 93 who fought off their attackers, preventing a fourth plane going into a building that we are to this day unsure of. A lot of people like to think it's the Capitol building, but wherever they were planning to place that plane, the people on that flight stopped them and gave their lives doing so. And let us not forget the people in the Pentagon and the people who just went to work that day in Towers 1 and 2. So this episode is dedicated to them. I'd also like to dedicate the episode to fallen heroes of another American event. 240 years ago today, the Continental Army clashed with the British Army under Lord Howe at the Battle of Brandywine. I'm excited to say that I will be fighting in the 240th reenactment for the Battle of Brandywine this weekend in Sandy Hollow, Pennsylvania. So, we are back, and we are getting rolling with the campaign in Canada. I'm sorry to say that I had to take a few weeks off starting the new job. There's a lot of responsibilities when you're starting a new position in a school. I was spending all my time getting ready for the year ahead, and I was having tons and tons of car trouble, which saw me in and out of the auto shop all of last week. So I'm back. I'm happy to be doing a podcast. I'm getting excited for the campaign in Canada, so let us get rolling. So when last I did a podcast, I talked about what was going on in upstate New York. And in upstate New York, we had talked about we had captured Fort Ticonderoga, we had captured Skanesboro, also known today as Whitehall, and Benedict Arnold raids into Canada, particularly the fort at St. John. So, that's where we are right now. And I'm really going to kick off the campaign by talking about a very important New Yorker. So this episode is actually going to be a character study on Philip Schuyler. So who is Philip Schuyler? Philip Schuyler is born in November of 1733 to Johannes and Cornelia van Cortlandt Schuyler, a rather prominent Dutch family from upstate New York. Philip is the couple's sixth child, but he's their first boy. I will tell you that Johannes Schuyler must have been tearing his hair out, that he had to go through five kids, technically, before he got to number six, which would be a boy. Though Philip would not be the only boy, a couple of brothers are born not long after he is. So, Philip is spending his early years at the family home in Albany, as well as the family farm called the Flats. His early education would be what you expect of a gentleman in colonial America. He learned math, arithmetic, reading, writing. Being that his family was of the Dutch Reformed religion, I would assume a formal education in the Dutch language would have already been ingrained into him, whether it's through school or the fact that his parents teach him themselves because they're speaking Dutch in the household. The interesting thing about Philip Schuyler is as a man that he is very adept to languages. He knows several languages and will learn several over the course of his lifetime. Obviously, being from an English colony, he's going to speak English. Being a Dutch family in a Dutch Reformed church, he grew up speaking Dutch. So we're just going to keep track because he will learn no less than six languages over the course of his lifetime. So let us continue. When Philip Schuyler is 7 years old, his father, Johannes, dies. And several of his uncles in the 1740s will follow after Johannes. So Philip Schuyler is in a unique position. He's not even a teenager, and several of his uncles and his beloved father will die, and Philip finds himself elevated to the head of the family. Now, Philip will be homeschooled until he's about 15. Then, when he is 15, he is sent to study with a French Protestant minister. He's sent to New Rochelle and is given a formal education, and he's prepared to take over as the head of the house. So for those keeping track at home, Philip Schuyler studies under a French Protestant minister, so it's not a surprise that he comes back speaking the French language. And Philip Schuyler returns in 1751 at the age of 18, and he looks every bit the part of a gentleman during colonial America who had some sort of money to his name. He looked the part, he acted the part, but there was just one thing that seemed off with Philip Schuyler, and that's because he's suffering from the ailment known as gout, and also another one known as pleurisy. Now, gout, a lot of people recognize it affects the joints, particularly in places like your foot or your legs. Pleurisy is issues with the respiratory system. These ailments would follow him the rest of his life. But this is a man that will not be brought down by some petty illnesses. No, he actually gathers up some things and heads out to the Mohawk Valley, where he will meet and set up trade negotiations with the Mohawk Indians. He actually becomes quite a friend and advocate for the Mohawk Indians. And if you can hang out with the Mohawks, you probably know the language. That's going to be Philip Schuyler's fourth language. Technically fifth, because I always count the understanding of the Latin language, which he did. It's just that it probably happened during his time with the French Protestant minister and not something he administered later on in life. So we'll say that the Mohawk language is actually the fifth language that he knows. In September of 1755, Philip Schuyler is now 22 years old, and he meets and marries Catherine Van Rensselaer. The Van Rensselaer family was an extremely wealthy family from upstate New York. They're actually from the city of Albany. There's still a Van Rensselaer and the Schuyler home, both of which are still there in the city today. When I say that Philip Schuyler is rich, well, he has some money. When I say the Van Rensselaers are rich, it means that they got a lot of money. And they are a match made in heaven. Catherine and Philip complement themselves very well. Philip will move his new bride into their Albany home, where they will spend most of their lives in that one particular mansion. But being a former park ranger at Saratoga National Historical Park, I would be stoned if I didn't mention his beloved farmhouse out in what today is called Schuylerville, but is actually Old Saratoga. Besides getting married in 1755, he will also join the provincial militia. He'll actually serve under John Bradstreet in his assault on Oswego. Schuyler excelled at moving supplies, and his math skills made him an excellent quartermaster. He would serve in that post as quartermaster until 1761. Schuyler continued his business dealings, kept up a functioning farm, but as the situation with Britain intensified, Schuyler was elected to the New York General Assembly in 1768, and quickly emerges as one of the leading voices against British taxes. When the General Assembly is disbanded in 1775, Schuyler is elected to the Second Continental Congress. He is sent there as a representative of New York, but after the formation of the Continental Army, Schuyler is chosen as one of the first four major generals in the Continental Army. He's assigned as the commander of the Northern Department. His territory included upstate New York, the Hampshire Grants, what today we know as the state of Vermont, New Hampshire, and parts of Maine, part of the, at the time, the Massachusetts colony. The plan after the raids into Canada was to use the support of the Canadians and their dislike of the British to remove the threat from the north. The plan was that the main force would leave Fort Ty and would head north and attack Fort St. John, Montreal, and then head to Quebec City. A second force, which is what we're going to talk about later on, under Benedict Arnold, would travel through the Maine wilderness and converge on Quebec directly. It's here where I'm going to kind of cut the story, because this is a simple setup talking about one of the leading field commanders for our campaign and just showing where he fits in the timeline for the campaign into Canada. The next several episodes are going to be our prepping for the attacks on St. John, Montreal, Quebec, so on and so forth. So for now, I'm just going to leave it off that he's made commander of the Northern Department, and I want to actually fast forward to the end of the war. Philip Schuyler actually resigns his commission in 1779 and will return to the Continental Congress. But once again, he is called back to New York to serve as the New York State Senator, or a New York State Senator. And in 1788, he's elected to the U.S. Senate. He will serve as one of the first two U.S. Senators from the state of New York. He will serve in that post until 1792, where another severe case of gout will sideline him again. This time, he'll retire and head back to his home in Albany and his farm in Saratoga. He'll continue his work also as a trader and land surveyor. Also in the post-war years, he developed a lock system on the Hudson so that it would be easier to transport goods up and down river. This lock system is actually still in place there. See, on the lower Hudson, it's a large river, fast currents, but it's pretty generally flat. But as you get farther and farther north, it becomes more rocky, has a lot more rapids. So what Schuyler does is he actually develops this lock system that will lift a gate so that water can come in. And when you got to get to a lower position, you let water in. It raises your boat up so you can swim out unimpeded. Best way to describe it is another version of the Panama Canal. With all this good fortune, it's eventually going to catch up with Schuyler. Not through anything that he did wrong. It's just that the early 1800s are not a great year for him. First of all, in 1803, his beloved wife, Catherine, dies. The following year, his son-in-law, Alexander Hamilton, yes, that Alexander Hamilton, is shot and killed in his duel. Philip Schuyler will die not long after Alexander Hamilton, being remembered as one of the finest New Yorkers and a hero of the American Revolution. Well, that's going to do it for this episode. It's short, sweet, to the point, and I just wanted to present Philip Schuyler because we're going to be talking about him a lot, and I just wanted people to, you know, learn about this great general, a person that I've followed his story for many years while working at Saratoga. So, I don't have any book recommendations this week just because there isn't a fine piece of literature devoted only to Philip Schuyler. I guess I'm going to have to get on the bandwagon and write a book about Philip Schuyler. Anyway, that's going to do it for this week. I just want to give everyone a nice reminder that in Sandy Hollow in Pennsylvania this weekend, the 1st Delaware is going to war against whatever British redcoats they have. So if you're free this weekend, bored, and want to see an actual battle, come see the 1st Delaware square off with the Redcoats as we fight the 240th anniversary of the Battle of Brandywine. So everyone have a great week. I will be back next week with the beginning of the Siege of St. John. And we are right on rolling into the campaign. So everyone have a great week, and just remember, keep your powder dry.